them. Two, I must have this thing. And so tonight we have Shelby from Washington, D.C.
Hello. No, I'm short. I'm so sorry. I'm Shelby. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 9th of 2017. I have a sponsor, and I have a home group, and I sponsor other women. Thank you. I think it was Billy who asked me to leave. He's not here, but thank you so much. I have never spoken for a whole hour before, but I like to talk. So, and I feel like when I lead meetings for like 10 or 15 minutes, I talk so much about my drinking or whatever, and then it's like supposed to be over. So I guess it's not like that. I don't know. Maybe it's not that hard for me to talk for an hour because I have a lot to say. But I guess my story of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in DC, like the city, and on the outside, like I had a lot of, like, you know, all the things that I needed. And so I'm very grateful for that. Like I went to a very good school and had access to education. Like we lived in a nice house, and I didn't want for or need anything materially, but it's interesting. Like when I went to like treatment and in hospitals and stuff, the doctors or counselors would ask my parents, like, is there any like alcoholism or addiction or mental illness in your family? And they'd be like, no, like this is such an anomaly. But that is not true at all. I've come to learn. My mom and dad themselves don't have this disease, but it is all over my family on both sides, as well as mental illness. And most of my family members are not in recovery for any of those things. And, you know, while, like I said before, like on the outside, my life and childhood looked pretty good. But there was a lot of chaos and dysfunction in my household. I was abused as a kid. And that made me feel very different from the people that I was going to school with. I like didn't know how to make sense of like what was happening to me and happening at my house. And I don't know how much or how little that has to do with me becoming an alcoholic, but it did make me feel very uncomfortable in my skin. I did not have any sense of self. I had very low self-worth. I was very secretive from a very young age. I like, you know, I would go to like my friends' houses for like sleepovers or whatever, and like didn't understand like why like their parents were so nice and seemingly normal and stuff. And like I never wanted people to come to my house when I was growing up. I never invited friends over because I was just like ashamed of like what was going on. And like in my mind, like this was not happening to anyone else that I knew, which of course isn't true, but as a child, I just felt like very apart from and separate from, like how, like, you know, I remember like, this is such a great analogy of like how I felt as a kid. I went to summer camp, like sleepaway camp. And like, I remember one summer I got there and like everyone had this one kind of brand of sneakers. And like, I did not have that brand of sneakers. And I felt like I didn't understand how everyone knew to get these sneakers. And like, I didn't know. And so like, it's just that feeling of like everyone has like the handbook to life, and like somehow like I never understood or got that. So I like to say like when I did find alcohol like in middle school, I really needed that drink. And I remember I was with some of my friends from summer camp visiting. Well, I was staying with my friend's grandparents in Florida. And we like stole alcohol from my friend's grandparents and like put it in like a plastic water bottle. And we went to the Cheesecake Factory and all got dinner and got like sodas and then drank half the soda and then put the glass under the table and put alcohol in it. And that's when I first felt the effects of alcohol. And it was like an experience unlike anything I'd ever felt before. Like, I felt so below everyone else around me. Like when I felt the effects produced by alcohol, like I was finally like pretty enough and funny enough. I wasn't so consumed with what everyone around me thought of me and like, oh my God, is what I'm saying sounding weird? Like I wasn't overthinking things, you know, like I was like the ideal version of myself when I felt the effects of alcohol. And I wanted to maintain that feeling for as long as possible. So I kept drinking. And like we do, like I overshot the mark and I don't know. The next thing I know, I was like in a closet, like crying, saying I was going to kill myself. And my friends were like, what happened? And like that sort of thing happened all the time. And like the consequences for me, came on very quickly. Like when I, like 9 months later or something, I went, like I said before, I went to, a really good school and everyone was very focused on like academics and stuff. Like I was the first one to do everything, to drink and stuff like that. Like there was no one peer pressuring me to do that. Like I just decided to do it. And I went to like a party and no one was drinking except for me. And I showed up like blacked out. And I was, you know, saying I was going to kill myself at this party. And there was the parents were like upstairs. And so, you know, we were like 14 years old, so they didn't know what to do. So they went and got the parents. And they called my parents. I ended up going to the emergency room. I don't know exactly what happened in the hospital, but the doctor ended up calling like CPS, on my mom. And, I wasn't allowed at school, until I got a psychiatric evaluation saying that I was mentally stable enough to be there. And that very like dramatic, chaotic, like big situation is very characteristic of like what happens when I drink. Everything's like so dramatic and crazy. And like, as much as I would tell myself, like, this is only affecting me, like it affected everyone around me, very negatively. And I just like, could not see that. And like, I remember, my parents had to go into the school and like talk about what happened or whatever. And the school counselors told my parents and like the principal and stuff that like I was an alcoholic and that I needed to go to like a rehab for like adolescence. And my parents were like, no, like she's 14, like, you know, because like their idea of alcoholism was like not the correct idea of like what that is, you know? And so I thought I could not be an alcoholic. I was too young. You know, I was very depressed also before I like started drinking. And so I thought, you know, this is happening like because I'm depressed and like the alcohol is just making it worse, which it was making it worse. But like, that's not to say that I don't have alcoholism. Like I can have both. And so I just like told myself that if I just fixed like the depression that I was having, then I wouldn't have this abnormal reaction to alcohol. And that I would be able to drink, normally, quote unquote. And obviously that didn't happen. Like I was a liability to everyone around me. Like in high school, like people would like ban me from parties and not let me go to them because they were afraid they were going to get in trouble because they just didn't know what was going to happen. When I drank, you know, like, sure, there were times like where things were like fine and like nothing bad happened. But more often than not, like something very dramatic happened. I'm like passed out, like face down on the grass, like throwing up, or like screaming and crying or like, you know, saying something horrific to someone, you know, just like making everything about me and like just ruining everyone's night and like making everyone super concerned. And then I was just like get very defensive, and like push people away. And because I was very young, it was kind of hard to find alcohol a lot of the time. And so, you know, when I was like 15, 16, I started doing other substances, and that like, you know, really took things to another level. And I know this is an AA meeting, but I will say that I am so grateful that I had that experience with other substances, because if I didn't, I don't think I would have gotten sober when I did, when I was 18, because things got so bad so fast. And anyways, so like that just like the combination of alcohol and those other things just made things exponentially worse. And I was doing all this like by myself again, because I just like didn't have friends to do this with, because people, you know, weren't as focused on that. Or I would like seek out these really sketchy people that were interested in participating in those sorts of things. And I was constantly putting myself in very dangerous situations with people who did not care about my well-being. And I was very easy target to be taken advantage of in several different ways. And I just like created this reputation for myself, I guess, of like this crazy party girl. And I wanted to like prove to people that I was cool and could hang. And like, I was just like so much cooler than everyone. And you all are just like losers because you're like not interested in doing what I'm doing. But like, you know, reality is like, there was nothing cool or cute or fun about the way that I drink. And I decided to go to college in New York City. And that was like my dream come true. Like I thought like, if I just moved to New York City and like be, you know, became a socialite and like hung out with like very cool rich girls and go to very exclusive, expensive like bars and clubs and drink super fancy like drinks or whatever, somehow like that would make me feel whole and make me feel okay. And I just very much had this very glamorous association with drugs and alcohol. And when I got to New York City, everything was just a disaster. Obviously, I was like, wasn't living at home anymore. And like, I would make friends. And then like 2 weeks later, like they would stop being my friend or not want to go out with me anymore because I would do something really like crazy. And it was very dangerous the way I was drinking and living in New York City, because like going out and getting like blackout drunk at a club and then like peeing your pants at the club and then like running out and like walking home and like screaming at people, like, you know, it's like shocking that I like was not murdered or something. Cause I was just being so, I just did not care. And like, mixing like alcohol with other substances that I knew you were not supposed to do. Like I just like had this very passive suicidal ideation where like, I wasn't always thinking about like wanting to kill myself, but like, I didn't really care if something happened to me. Like I was indifferent about waking up or going or not the next day. And like by the end of my time, at school there, which was a long 6 or 7 months, before I left, like I was totally alone. I could not take a sober breath. Immediately when I woke up, I was on something. And I was on something till I went to sleep. I wasn't going to school, and school was something I used to really care about. And now I couldn't have cared less about that because it was just in the way of my drinking. Everyone, you know, I wasn't talking to my parents. Everyone was just so, except unless I needed money, and or like something like that, or I don't know, like I would call my parents in the middle of the night being like, cancel my credit card, like I was mugged, you know, and that's the only time they ever heard from me. And then I just would never thank them or anything for helping me. And so I remember like my last night there, I had was living in like the dorms, and obviously you're not allowed to be drinking. But I got in trouble a couple of times and got caught drinking by like the RA. And, my like last night there, I guess I had two of my high school friends staying with me. And I threw a party in my room and there was a bunch of people there. I don't know. I was on like 4 different substances. I barely remember. But something happened where like the police came and like, I was going to get kicked out of my housing. So I was going to be homeless. And I remember, I went to go stay like with my friend's friend that night. And I remember, I don't even think I went to sleep. Like I, you know, during my time at NYU, I was like in and out of the hospital, like just constantly putting my life at risk. And I didn't care up until this moment where I was like at my friend's house, like thinking about I didn't know that I needed or wanted to get sober, but I knew I was gonna die, and I didn't actually wanna die. And I was really, really, really scared. And that was like that moment of willingness, that, you know, divine intervention, whatever, where I, for like a short period of time, like had the willingness. I actually think I called my therapist and told her I need to go home. And then I called my mom or something and told her that I was coming home, and I didn't say why or anything. And like the next day I told my mom that I was addicted to this other drug, not alcohol, which I was. And I started going to an IOP, and at this IOP, they told me to go to AA meetings, and I wasn't in school. Obviously I dropped out. I wasn't doing anything all day. I was really lonely. I had no friends. I didn't want to be at home all day. So I actually started going to meetings, and I had no intention of getting sober, like long-term. Like at this IOP, they were drug testing me. So I was willing to not participate in any sort of substances for that time of the IOP. But I told myself, like, after this ends, I'm going to go back out drinking, because alcohol is not my problem. Like these other things are. And so I just had that mindset. And so I went to a Friday night meeting. That's been like my home group, my entire sobriety, in Georgetown in DC. It's a big young people's meeting. And I went by myself, and my parents like went to dinner, like across the street, because they like did not trust me to like actually go to a meeting. They were like making sure that I actually went. And it was like this huge meeting. And again, like at the meeting, everyone like goes around and introduces themselves and says like their sobriety date and stuff like that. And I introduced myself as an alcoholic, and I did not believe that I actually was. I think I just like had that peer pressure to say that. And I said it was my first meeting, and people, like we do, like swarmed me. I think I said something like just so crazy. And I thank God I did, though, because so many people came up to me and gave me their phone number, and I loved it. I, you know, a lot of people get overwhelmed by like being swarmed by people at their first meeting, but I was so freaking lonely. Like I was just so like, you know, it's so beaten down. And like, I had so many people like no longer want to be associated with me. It felt so nice that someone was like actually saying to me, like, how are you? Like, what are you doing this weekend? And stuff like that. Like, no one had actually wanted to do anything with me genuinely in a long time. The only people up until that point in those last few months of drinking that wanted to hang out with me could not care less about me, you know, or my well-being. Like, we were just there to make each other feel better about the fact that we were drinking alcoholically. And so I met my first sponsor at that meeting. And I, like maybe a week later, I like asked her to be my sponsor. And again, I had still had no intention of like actually getting sober. I don't know. I'm a huge people pleaser, and it's like one of my biggest character defects, but in this point of my life, it definitely served me, because if I wasn't a people pleaser like that, I don't know if I would have actually asked someone to be my sponsor, because everyone was being like, do you have a sponsor? And so I just, you know, wanted people to like me. So I got a sponsor, and I wanted my sponsor to like me. So I did what she told me to do. not because like I have much willingness or like anything like that. Like I just wanted people to like me. And in this crowd, which were the only people I was hanging out with because I had no other friends, like if I wanted people to like me, I had to like be involved in the meeting. I had to get a service position and like say that I have a sponsor and call my sponsor, even though I didn't even understand like what a sponsor was, or what alcoholism was. And I, you know, I got like a month sober. And then I, you know, I still had like those doubts in my mind as to whether or not I was an alcoholic. And like one night, like the day before my sobriety day, I relapsed, And I was on like antabuse and like naltrexone, which you're like super not supposed to drink on. And I drank anyways. And I actually drunk texted my therapist. And I wasn't, I was just like, I drank or something. And she was like, you need to wake up your parents and go to the hospital immediately. And I was like in the hospital, like my parents took me, I was in the psych ward and I was in the psych ward, like in this like weird part of DC. And like, you know, I was the only one there that like, wasn't having like genuine, like hallucinations. Like I was really scared. And I needed that to happen because I needed to be thoroughly convinced that I was an alcoholic and that when I put alcohol into my body, I don't know what's going to happen. My best guess is that I'll probably overshoot the mark and hurt myself, hurt somebody else or both. And like, it helped me also like, you know, whenever I was doing like those other substances, like there was almost always alcohol there. Countless nights I told myself, I'm just gonna have a couple drinks. What happens? I drink a whole bottle of wine or, you know, like six shots, and then I'm like calling the dealer and then I'm like out of money, and it's like 3 days later. So anyways, I needed that to happen, and that was like my rock bottom. And when I got out, I called my sponsor at the time, and told her what happened. And I met up with her at a meeting and said, like, I just got out of the psych ward, like, please help me. And from then I like redid my first step and I, you know, have been sober since then. My early sobriety is such a blur. I like was just crying for like 4 months straight. I was so angry. I was 18 when I came in and I was just so confused because it's not entirely abnormal for like college students to want to experiment with alcohol and whatever. And I just didn't understand why some of my like friends from outside of AA, were able to like go out and like drink or whatever. And then like the next day, like go to school or work and like live a normal life and like not be like paralyzed by fear by checking their phone the next morning. If they even still have their phone, because God knows I broke my phone like so many times, lost my wallet, lost all my belongings so many times. And so I was just like very angry that, you know, I was getting sober and that like I couldn't do the quote normal things that people my age were doing. I just like so badly wanted to be able to like go to a house party or whatever, and like have a couple drinks and like feel like a part of, you know. And I was just like so envious. And like with social media and stuff, it was very hard for me seeing like people like that I knew on social media, like going to parties and drinking and stuff. And like, I wasn't invited. And it was just very difficult for me to like accept the fact that like, I cannot drink safely. I knew that, but like, I was just like really mad about it. But you know, I think the thing that helped me with that was like the fellowship. You know, I had like a couple friends that came in around the same time as me when I was new, and we did, you know, so much fun stuff together. Like we would go, you know, out to eat after meetings, like every night of the week to like 12:30, you know, at night, and stuff like that. And so that really helped me. I also like, you know, people told me like when I first got into the program, like don't date anyone until you have a year or whatever. And when I was a couple months sober, I met someone at my home group, and he was not interested in getting sober. But I think so much of the issue for me was I not only was drawn to the way that alcohol made me feel, it was also like the lifestyle around drinking and partying. And he, this guy I met at this meeting, was still like in that. And I was very drawn to like the chaos that was like his life. And I just like wanted, I don't know what I was looking for, but I like started dating him. And I don't even think I told my sponsor. I think she like found out from someone else that I had a boyfriend. And that's when, you know, the first few months of sobriety, like I like I mentioned before, I was such a people pleaser. I would do anything she'd tell me, you know. I was calling her every day. Like, I needed someone to tell me how to Swiffer my floor, or mm-hmm. like how to do laundry, like basic things. Cause I genuinely did not know, how to like take care of myself, because I wasn't, I like wouldn't shower for like a week when I was drinking, or anything. And so this kind of changed things for me. And in hindsight, like, you know, not that I would ever recommend someone do what I did, but I got into a relationship with this person, and it was so addictive. Like, you know, he was like a drink with two legs, you know, and that replaced alcohol for me. And maybe like it did help me like stay sober in the very beginning when I was really struggling with cravings and stuff like that, because I was no longer obsessing about alcohol. I was obsessing about this person. And it became very chaotic, the relationship. He wasn't like I said, not interested in getting sober. And there was just a lot that was going on. And there was a lot of domestic violence in the relationship, and it was very difficult for me to like be a member of AA and be like going to meetings. And like, I was doing steps, you know, I had service at meetings, I had friends in the program, all this stuff. But I felt for a long time like I was kind of like, I was doing a lot on all the things, but also doing a lot of other bad, not bad, but things that were really harmful to me. And so I kind of felt like in a way I was living like a double life, because like at meetings, like I would go up to newcomers and, you know, I was even like sponsoring people. And I no longer had the obsession to drink, and that had been removed for some time. But I was, you know, I just like, I've been reading Drop the Rock with, a sponsee of mine. So like a lot of that is like in my head right now, but like how like sober am I really, if I'm going to be acting addictively in these other areas of my life? I really struggled. I was not being honest with a sponsor. It was just really a hard time. Like my first like 3.5 or so years. I pushed a lot of people away. It was just a lot. And finally, like when I decided to leave that relationship, it was like one of the hardest things I've ever done. Like besides getting sober, like I was so ashamed that I had like, you know, a couple years sober and like had been living my life in like just such a crazy way. And like, you know, I was around a lot of active addiction and alcoholism. And you know, it's a real miracle that I stayed sober through all that. And when I left the relationship, it was during COVID, like the very beginning ish of the pandemic. And I was living by myself. And it was like when everyone was like actually isolated from each other, and like people, like if you wanted to hang out with someone, you'd have to like go to a parking lot and like sit in your cars or something. Like that's what things were like. So I had to get a big God real, real fast, to get through that, you know, because I had a higher power, you know, and like, I guess like on and off believed it could restore me to sanity. And I could see how a higher power had worked in my life, in regards to my alcoholism, and that it was not anything that I did or anything that was my idea that helped me to stop drinking. But when it came to like other areas of my life, I just thought I was too broken or too bad, of a case for a higher power or anyone in AA to help me. You know, I was so isolated from everyone, because I just was in this place where I felt like no one understands what I'm going through. Like, no one really knows the truth. Cause I would do this thing too, where like, I'll tell someone one thing and then another person another thing. So like, no one knows the full story of like what's actually going on with me. And so it took me until I had like a little over 3 years sober to actually start really getting honest with a sponsor and telling someone like the full picture. And doing that, and like it being okay and not going, you know, because I was just so scared that like, you know, if I told someone like the full truth about me, even in like doing like a fifth step, that they would just like be like, you're too effed up, you know, I can't help you, you know. And so like having the experience of telling someone like the full truth and it going okay, and not feeling judged or anything like that, helped me to start building that relationship that I needed with a higher power to get through that time. And like, you know, cause I was alone. And you know, I was like the most suicidal I'd ever been in my life. It was just awful. And so I had to really, really pray like for God to just like help me, you know? And having gotten through that period of my life and stayed sober and am okay now, has, you know, really shown me like, if, you know, my higher power like is big enough to carry me through everything, and anything, like, you know, my old sponsor used to say that she was a part of like the no matter what club, like we drink no matter what circumstances happen. And so I had to like really stick to that, because I didn't, like I said, I didn't want to drink during that time, but I did not want to be here. And so like getting out of that period, I have seen how that experience helped me so much to connect with other women. And I think like a lot of our, you know, like it says, like when, you know, in the big book, like we are uniquely useful, to help other alcoholics, get sober and stay sober. Like I have that, but I also have like experiences in sobriety, like we all do, that make us uniquely useful to be helpful to someone going through whatever situation. Like, and that's what's so cool about AA, is like anything that I could possibly be going through, I love to think that I'm special and different from everyone, but like I'm really not, and like my problems are not as bad most of the time as I think they are, or as unique. And like I learned that too through going like through the four step, and like I said, like I was always so scared to like do the fourth step, and I've done it multiple times, and every time such like a cathartic experience, and helped me like so much to feel closer to my sponsor and feel closer to a higher power. And like there's so much stuff like from my drinking and from sobriety too, that I was just like, I'm never gonna tell this to anyone, I can't tell this to anyone, like no one's ever done something this bad before. And like to tell a sponsor these things and them have like a straight face, no reaction at all. It's almost kind of disappointing. But like, you know, like it's such a relief. Like, thank God that's not the case, because like I would be screwed, if like I had some sort of problem that no one's ever gone through before. And like, I have, you know, really like kind of been in six and seven for a while, currently. And like, I think for a lot of my sobriety, I didn't really understand what the six and seven steps were, just because in the big book, it's such a small portion. And so I just like didn't really understand what it meant to like have my character defects be removed, and like what even are my character defects and how they're manifested and stuff. And it wasn't until like in the past like year or so where I've really like stayed in six and seven for like some time and read Drop the Rock, and now taking a sponsee through Drop the Rock, that I like am starting to understand what the six and seven steps are, and what emotional sobriety is. Because like I said, like there was a long period of time where I was here in AA, but like outside of AA, like I didn't have much, if any, emotional sobriety. And how sober am I really? How grateful am I really for my sobriety if I'm like willing to like screw my life up in the ways that I was? And so I had to come to the realization that I don't have the luxury anymore to act out in these other behaviors in order to avoid making a relationship with God. Because I won't stay here. Whether it means I drink or, you know, kill myself, like I won't stay here if I am not working 6 and 7 every day. And, you know, those are like, you know, I didn't realize until like the past year or so how vital those steps are, and how like I'm never going to be perfect. Like there's never going to be a time where like all my character defects are removed and I'm just perfect. Like this is going to be a lifelong journey for me, but like I have, you know, if I want to stay here, I have to like let a higher power in and allow a higher power to remove my defects of character so I can act with integrity and in line, you know, with what my higher power wants for me. And like, what's the point of making amends if like I'm not willing to really, really give up my character defects? You know, because they were such a big part, I felt, of like who I was as a person. Like, for example, like when I was in this situation with my ex-boyfriend, like I saw myself being a victim as like such a vital part of my identity. I did not want to like, part of me did not want to give up that like character defect of like seeing myself, self-pity, I guess. And because I was like, who am I if I'm not like constantly feeling sorry for myself? Who am I if I'm not constantly in situations where I'm being taken advantage of by whoever, you know, like, because I a lot of the time would put myself in positions to be hurt by other people, you know? So I had to trust that, you know, there's going to be something that replaces those character defects. And until that happens, like, what's the point of me like going and making amends to people? Like I started making amends, when I had like 8-9 months sober, like to my family for stuff and friends from my drinking and stuff like that. And a lot of them, you know, were really awesome experiences. Like when I got back from New York, like I was like, I can never go to New York City again. I'm going to run into the people I used to hang out with in a city of like millions and millions of people. I'm like, I'm going to run into them and they're going to be like that, like demon girl. Like, she's just like, ah, you know what I mean? Like I was just, you know, as if they're like thinking about me, but I was terrified to ever go back there because, and also I just had so many negative associations with that city. And so when I had less than a year and a half sober, maybe like 15 months or something, a friend in the program and me went up to New York City to do an amends. And it was one of those amends to like one of my old, like, friends who, like, you know, we all have those people we make amends to who, like, in our mind we're like, but they hurt me more, you know, like, why? And I did all this stuff, but they did all this stuff too, like, where's my apology? And it was so humbling to go to New York, which I was terrified to do, and go see this girl who, like, I was terrified to see because she, like, the last time I saw her, she was like, I hate your guts. And make amends to her. Like, I get so embarrassed to like bring up this stuff to people. Like, I get so embarrassed and feel so awkward about the amends process. I hate the amends process, but it's so, so, so rewarding. I can't describe the feeling of when I left that like lunch that I had with her, where like I read my amends letter to her, you know, not that she had to apologize to me for like the stuff that happened between us, but, you know, that did happen. And like, I didn't have to feel so like guilty and weird about like the way that I treated her, because like, I know, like, I don't have to act that way anymore. I don't have to, like, ruin people's lives because of the way that I drink. And, like, you know, I've had a number of amends like that where, like, I had this friend at my college who, when I left, I don't know. I think she told me that she like couldn't hang out with me anymore because I was like such a bad influence and that like she just like doesn't want anything to do with me anymore because like I had, you know, a drinking and drug problem and she just couldn't be around it anymore. And that was like my last friend. So I was like devastated. Like my last actual friend, not like just like someone that I drank in proximity to. That was like devastating. And like when I had like maybe a little less than 2 years, she was in DC for something, I don't know what, but she asked me to like hang out and I was like, this is my time. I have to go make amends to her. So I wrote my, you know, amends letter to her, and read it to her. And she like apologized for like having kind of those texts that she sent me about, and just like for stopping being my friend. And I remember I told her like, you don't have anything to apologize for. Like if anything, like I need to thank you because if you didn't say that, like I probably would not have stayed in DC and gotten sober. And that was not me saying that. Like I was so mad when she was like, told me all that when I first left NYU or my college, whatever, it was NYU. And like, I was like, I can't, because when that happened, I was like, I have no one that I actually like that's there. Like, I can't go back there. But like, it's true. Like, thank God she like cut me off because that made it so I had no actual reason to go back there. And it, you know, kind of got me closer to getting into AA. And so it's just like crazy that I even said that. Like that was like one of those moments where it was not me. It was like a higher power speaking through me, you know? And like a lot of these people that I made amends to, like, we're not like best friends again, but like, I am not gonna like sprint the other direction and hide under a car if I saw them on the street, you know? Like I could say hi to them. And like that is something that like maybe to someone else like they wouldn't see the big deal to that, but like for me, like that is like a huge deal because I'm so terrified of people, like not having to be afraid of people, and knowing that I've done everything I possibly can to make things right with the people that I've hurt is a feeling that I don't really have like words to like accurately capture. And like, I am, you know, gonna start doing amends again soon. And I am kind of nervous about doing that because I made amends to my dad. That was the first amends that I did, like when I had like 8 months sober, you know, cause I put, you know, my dad was like the biggest enabler ever. And like, I remember like in high school, like, I like was sleeping at my friend's house and then he picked me up, from my friend's house. And he was like, hey, I was like looking in your room, like for your inhaler. And there was like a bag of, white powder in your backpack. Like, what is that? And I was like, it's not mine. It's my friend's. And then when I got home, it was still there. Like, that's so crazy. But you know, whatever. And so like, I really hurt him. He like did not sleep. I don't know how he got any sort of sleep like during my active alcoholism. And so like getting sober and like not doing, like robbing him of his peace of mind is like important to me. And like, because of my actions in like my first like three and a half years of sobriety, like with this relationship, like I made amends to him, but like nothing actually changed because I remember I had like actually an intervention when I like a little over 2 years ago, and with my dad and my like psychiatrist, and my dad was saying how he can't he travels a lot for work. And he said he has not traveled for work, even though he needed to, in months. He like loves going to the movies with my stepmom. He has not gone to a movie theater in months. And like sleeps with his phone all the way up, the volume all the way up, like under his pillow, because he's terrified that he's going to get a call that I'm dead. And that's my dad when I had 3 years sober. And that was very, very jarring to me. And it's very difficult to think about how I already have made an amends to him, but like in sobriety for years, like nothing actually changed. And so that's something that I feel a lot of guilt about, and it's going to take a lot of time to like make right. It's not just reading him a letter and having this like, oh, we love each other and hugging experience. Like that is like a living amends that I'll probably have to do for the rest of my life. Just because of how much I've robbed him and other people, of their peace of mind, like because of my like decisions and my like self-destructive tendencies. And so that's like kind of something that I'm grappling with right now and like working on right now to hopefully go and do that amends soon, because like the past, you know, like almost 2 years now with my dad have been like so much better. Like I am not like constantly lying to him about stuff. Like he's not worried about me anymore and like where I am. Like I, you know, call him and ask him how he's doing and stuff. Like he's not, there's not like crisis after crisis like there was for a long time, you know. Like I have started the living amends, but it's not over. It's gonna, you know, have to continue for as long as I'm alive, basically. And so like going into like 10 and 11, like the, you know, I think the 10 step is so important, because like, I am the type of person where I really have had to learn that with my sponsor, like I was never for a long time. And a lot of the time, I guess still I can sometimes do this where I am reporting things to my sponsor after they've already happened versus bringing it up before. And if I'm just reporting to my sponsor the things that are happening, like, what the heck is she gonna say? Like, what is she gonna do to help me? Like, why did you do that? Like, it already happened. The damage is already done, you know? And that's why I need things like the 10th step to like nip those things in the bud before they like explode. I started working with a new sponsor like maybe 7 months ago. And she, has me like do like an inventory and read it to her, which is like new to me because I just like to talk about like nothing. And then like in the last 5 minutes of the conversation, like drop a bomb. And that's what I do to my therapist too, which is like even worse because I'm like paying to be there. So like, I'm just like wasting so much money. That has helped me so much to like talk about things like, or the little resentments before they become like so like take over my life, you know what I mean? And so I need to, you know, having that 10 step practice helps me, you know. And I think like, because I'm very hard on myself, like, and I think a lot of people can be that way. And I, for a long time, misinterpreted the 10th step and thought it was just me, just like all the things that I'm doing wrong. And like, I'm just such a horrible person, la, la, la. When the 10th step is not about that, for me, like I have to take a balanced look at myself because yes, I'm an imperfect person. I'm a human being. I'm going to make mistakes for the rest of my life. I'm going to, you know, have to make amends to people for the rest of my life. But like, I also need to recognize like where I'm doing well, and like recognize like how I've, you know, how things have changed and like where I've been able to like apply the principles of the program for real in my life. And so in order, you know, for me, you know, because it talks about it and Drop the Rock, like I'm not here at this point because I am, if I don't, I'm like, oh my God, if I don't come to AM, you know, if I miss this meeting, if I don't call my sponsor on this time or whatever, I'm going to drink again. I don't want to live like in constant fear. I'm here because I want to grow spiritually. I want to live a good life. I want to better myself and I want to keep growing closer to God. I don't want to live in fear. Yes, if I, you know, start slacking consistently, there's of course a chance of relapse. But I am ultimately here because like I enjoy being here. And so like going into like 11 and 12, I've talked some about, you know, God and like, you know, prayer and meditation can be hard. Like I, you know, especially meditation for me, because I am like the type of person, like I need to be watching a TV show and playing video games and like talking on the phone all at the same time. So a single thought does not come into my head. Because if it does, then I don't know what's going to happen, you know, because that's just like my, what I gravitate towards. So getting quiet and being still is hard because like, I get scared. I don't know. But like, that's something like that, like I'm practicing at, every day and you know it is a slow, you know, it is like a slowly but surely I'm getting better at it and getting better at being quiet, because when I practice meditation like consistently, then it helps me to like be able to invite God into situations where like I would, you know, normally want to just like act impulsively. It gives me like the ability to put some space in between acting and like, you know, because when I'm acting super impulsively, then God is not there, you know, God's not in the situation. And when I am able to like get quiet and slow down on a regular basis, it allows me to do that, like just in my everyday life. And then like going into like the 12th step, like I, no one was asking me for anything for like a long time. Like I was not capable of doing anything in my drinking. I was not reliable. You know, you couldn't rely on me for anything. So like being like a sponsor, now and just like being able to like be a consistent person in anyone's life, and being able to like give away what was so freely given to me, you know, like it's so cheesy. And sometimes I hate when people are being like super cheesy, but like it is so rewarding. Like there are times like, you know, when I was going through this time, like 2 years ago, during the beginning of COVID, where I was like super like suicidal, I was sponsoring this girl and I've been sponsoring her for a couple months. And she was like a chronic relapser and then like got sober, like right before everything shut down. So she was like struggling, and calling me like constantly. And like, it was fine because I was not doing anything either because we were all in like isolation. But I remember like I was such a bad place mentally. I remember talking to my sponsor at the time and being like, I think I need to like fire this girl and tell her to get a new sponsor because I'm not in a place to like help her. And my sponsor was like, no, don't do that. That's a horrible idea. And like, thank God I listened to her, because at the time, like my sponsee at the, you know, who was like just going through it, like getting newly sober, like had no idea that like she was saving my life, literally. She had no idea that like when I wasn't on the phone with her, like I was like thinking about hanging myself in my closet. And like, she gave me like a reason, you know, to like keep going, because, you know, I, you know, was like, I have to answer the phone, you know, when she would call me, cause I knew she was going through a hard time. And I, you know, I still sponsor her, and I got to tell her that, like, you know, not that long ago, that like, you know, I can't explain like how, like, I don't, you know, of course, like not any one person like can save anyone really, but like, you know, God put her in my life at that time for a reason. And I know that for sure. And so like, you know, I guess like other things like outside of that, like you know, I dropped out of school when I got sober. And like when I was 7 months sober, I was able to like go back to school. And I was like kind of just, you know, had a decision of like, do I want to go back to NYU and like live in like an apartment because I was banned from the housing. And I decided to stay at school, transfer to a school in DC because like I had this community here in DC and like all these friends in AA who are also in college. And we were like doing this experience of being sober and in college together. And like I was able to graduate from school in the winter. And now I have like a dance job, I guess. And like at doing like at a you know firm doing like PR for like big corporations. And it's so funny to me that someone said like a couple weeks ago, like how I'm so flexible and adaptable and that I don't need a lot of oversight because they know that if they ask me to do something, it's going to get done. Like, that's very crazy. Like they have no idea like who I am. And like that's just like, it's bizarre to me. Like some, like, you know, like, and I struggle, like, you know, I want to be the best at everything. And my sponsor has to constantly remind me that I'm just there to like be of service to my employer and be a worker among workers. I don't have to be the best at everything. I just need to do my job and like do what I say I'm going to do. And that's it. Like, I don't have to be number one at everything. But it's just so crazy that they think that about me and that like they want me, give me more responsibility and that they like, that people depend on me at my job. And I'm like doing like very important. I'm not very important, but like, you know, I don't know. I'm sure they would be fine if I wasn't there, but like they let me get involved in like more stuff. And like, it's so crazy to me. Like it blows like my mind, like all the time at my job, especially like, cause if only they knew like how like lazy I can be or like, just like how, what I was like 5 years ago. And how I was like, you know, I got fired from my job when I was like 6 months sober, like, because I was texting too much. And I was like a job I worked at 10 hours a week. So it was just like, that was me, you know, and now like they are, you know, people are like more than one person is asking stuff of me at the same time. And I'm like, so overwhelmed, but it's like, oh my God, like what a luxury problem that is that like they trust me to do things. So now like they want me to do more stuff. And like, that's just basically like my experience in a nutshell. It's like so crazy that people from outside of the program, my friends, they call me for help with like their life. And like, I did not care one bit about my friends and their problems. Cause when I was drinking, cause I was having crisis after crisis, like my stuff was bad, like your stuff doesn't matter. But now like people call me for things and they know like I'll probably answer the phone unless I'm busy. So like, it's just crazy like what this program can do and what like letting a higher power in can do and like what happens like when I let other people in AA do and like how like I definitely wouldn't be here if I wasn't like trudging this journey like with the friends that I've made. Like I've heard someone say like how you make friends in AA in dog years because you're immediately like, what's the worst thing you've ever done? Like when you meet someone. And so like, I've just made like the most amazing friends here. And it's just such a blessing. And I know I talk a lot, so I'm so sorry, but thank you again for having me. Thanks for letting me share.